Welcome to Pleb Chain Radio, a live show brought to you by Plebs for Plebs, which focuses on the intersection of Nostr and Bitcoin protocols. Join QW and Avi as they run down the weekly news and developments, breaking down the current thing and the future frontier with the foundation of decentralization, the builders, thinkers, doers, and plebs. You're live. Welcome, gentle plebs, to episode 71 of Pleb Chain Radio. It is currently 4 p.m. on the East Coast of the USA. It is July 26th. We are currently competing with Bitcoin conference. looks like I'll continue. Today's guest is Heather Larson. She's a Nostr contributor, social media extraordinaire, podcaster, and a local Nostr PHX cult member. How you doing, Heather?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. Thank you, Dub.
So to talk about, we're competing against, I'm pretty sure Snowden goes on in 30 minutes.
Can't
it's going to be an interesting, I like to think we're having our own conference, maybe our own panel. Because
conference.
I was looking at a lot of the people on the stages, and it's not that exciting to me when I look at Robinhood app and Scaramucci and
the Mooch.
All the banks and I actually had Toonster playing also, and that music just started playing in my headset.
Well, I don't think we
got to pause that. We got a lot of competition out there.
We do. We got people in Nashville at the conference. I went and got on the Bitcoin conference Instagram to see what it was showing, and they have their fancy stage, you know, inside the conference, and then there's like, you know, the Toonster at the Embassy Suites looks a lot more lit. I'm just saying. I'm going to go on record saying that.
I wonder how many people are there, because every time we see these streaming videos, you never see the crowd. You never see. It's always just the stage.
Yeah, I've had that same thought where I'm like, well, how many people are in the audience? How many tickets were sold?
It's like Nostr PHX, just throw out a vibe that there's just a massive amount of people there over at Culture Shock.
I think I counted like 30.
We started with 21 at the beginning of the day, but yeah, we got up there. And then we had a few run in that we had that typo on the Culture Shock or Nostr PHX website. And it said PM. So we had people come right at the end of the event. They drove from Tucson. It's like, oh man, let's go get some drinks and have fun or get something to eat.
You guys had an after party. I was like, no, I'm going home. I'm going to bed.
I mean, it wasn't that crazy. It wasn't a Satoshi Nakamoto event or anything like that. So what are you seeing right now? I mean, obviously the Bitcoin Nashville, it seems like a lot of the Nostriges are not at the actual event. They're just starting their own parties around, whether it's the Pub Key and the RHR, the Toonster. And then, like you just mentioned, the what the heck's it called? What is Jim Costello throwing? What's the name of it?
Phantom Power Music.
Bands at Bitcoin.
There you go. Bands at Bitcoin is Jim's thing. That's right.
Yeah. And that's like 3 days of value for value artists just playing. And of course, it's going through Toonster. So I've been checking that. I honestly have not looked at the Bitcoin conference streaming once. Have you?
Yeah, and it's always like a few talking heads. And some of them I like. I like Nico from Simply Bitcoin. I think that was my entry into the space 4 years ago, was watching Simply Bitcoin. Yeah. And so like I like a little bit of it. And then I'm like, well, who are some of these people? I don't recognize them all.
Yeah, yeah. There's the one thing about the Bitcoin conference versus, let's say, BitBlock Boom. Any scent of shitcoinery gets thrown out. Whereas Bitcoin conference, there's a very gray area of what goes and what's allowed in the space. Anything's allowed in the space, but what's allowed at that conference? What specifically? Because you really dive into the ordinals and things that kind of fringe upon scammery, you know.
I think it's forked. I think that there you're absolutely right that there actually is, you know, there's the Bitcoin conference with the I don't know, not every Bitcoiner is there too. I mean, I've talked to some people who are definitely not there, like I can't make it, and so like there's some good maxis who aren't in attendance, and then there's the shitcoinery that's obviously happening. And I think that it has forked into, like, now there's this other thing that's happening called Noster. And that's where you're going to find your Wavelake, your Toonster, your Fountain, your RSS Blue folks. And everybody's gathering together to kind of do our own thing. Like, we don't need your thing. Now, would this happen, though, if this wasn't in Nashville? That is the question, because you're in Music City.
Yeah. Well, no, and Jim's located there, and he's a big advocate with the Phantom Power, and obviously Ainsley's father. Anybody that's listening, Ainsley Costello, she really got put on the map when she was the very first 1 million sats on Wavelake. And then they did the value for value show, when I think they got around 18 million sats between Just Loud and her performing at Open Mic's venue in Minneapolis. And that really kind of triggered, that's when all the tools were getting built and they actually started working. So it was exciting for the whole space. And you know what's so funny is because Jim, it corresponds with Jim, right before that, went to Bitcoin Park. And obviously Jim was on our show, but I think he was in the mortgage or investment. And he went over to Bitcoin Park to kind of network and ended up getting orange pilled along the way. So,
which is amazing. Because I mean, look what has been built from that. Because because Jim was the perfect person to orange pill and purple pill, and now, like, you've got his whole thing going on with Phantom Power Media. He's helping a lot of artists, and of course Ainsley got orange pilled. Ainsley told me mom is orange pilled, so we got a whole orange pilled family there.
Psychopaths, one after another.
I love it.
but what I think is neat is they're applying the Bitcoin to the use case. The use case is being applied to the way they live their life, the way they see Bitcoin. They don't see it as just a piece of digital real estate. They're actually using it. You're using it as a value for value mechanism, or the monetary side of things. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really neat in that application, because they're not learning it from, oh, this is the gold standard, this is a, number go up. They're actually using it with all their products and every time they go live, they're using it via Lightning. There's nothing out there that can do that. And the number two, the splits. So this is a big one with when you're trying to give royalties, or let's say I'm the drummer, I'm the bassist, you're the singer, any zaps can instantly be split throughout the bandmates. So there's nothing like it out there. And I'm glad that they're building that.
Yeah, it took a little work for me to do that for my podcast and figure it out, because I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know who to ask. I don't know how to get a hold of anybody. I'm just going to do it and, move fast and break things is the ethos of Silicon Valley. So I did it. And then I found out I actually did it right. Dovidas from RSS Blue sent me an email the next morning, like, hey, you did this right, but here's how you can do it better. And I was like, yes, now I know how to do this.
So did you watch the event last night, the Value for Value event? I know the answer.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
You know the answer. You watched it. I watched it. I think it was
me, you, and Quex, man, like Quex in the chat, just pumping up Joe and Ainsley and everyone involved. And of course, Just Loud opened up. I think he opened up. I don't think there was anybody before him.
I don't think so either. He opened up and then it was Ainsley and then it was Joe and then I went to bed. So I don't know what happened after that. But
I don't think they streamed the Satoshi Nakamoto event.
Okay. So I didn't miss anything. I don't
think that was actually streamed. Because typically that's random people want to go up there. I think Michael Ree was on the drums at one point. It's anybody that plays instruments wants to jump up there, and then it's kind of like a karaoke slash jam sesh, and they do all these. So that's a pretty famous part of the Bitcoin conferences, and it's certainly been adopted by the Noster side of things with the community outreach.
I think we need to add that to Culture Shock 25 next year.
You can bring your recorder, your flute. And
I've got a crappy guitar. I've got a ukulele. I've got I can show up and show out.
My son has a ukulele too. He can, he'd be happy to perform.
Oh man. He would probably smoke me on stage. Let me tell you, the ladies love QW's kid.
So Another thing I noticed from yesterday, last night, is there's two cultures going on. One in the Bitcoin Twitter world, and then one in the Bitcoin Noster world. It was like there's two parallel universes going on. One of them was the Bitcoin Twitter, where you got Hawk Tua girl. You got all the politicians. you got you know, a few celebrities. You got a karate event going on. And everyone's tuned into that.
Yeah, like, what was that? Cool thing.
It was the, it, like, I don't know.
RFK was in the audience at that thing, and then he's meeting Hawk Tua girl, and it's like, does he have Secret Service protection or not?
Like, I think Trump actually sent Hawk Tua girl to him to maybe get his vote, maybe get his back.
But that's why he needs protection.
The secret weapon.
Because of Hawk Tua girl.
I don't know, but it was.
It's noticeable.
And then you look on the Twitter side, the Noster side, and we're all pumping our live music. We're pumping our live shows. We're shooting Zap. We're shooting Zaps out. We're actually using Bitcoin.
We're not pumping our bags. We're pumping other people's bags. Like, we're pumping Ainsley and Just Loud and Joe, and we're showing the use case while everybody else is self-flagellating over at the Bitcoin conference.
100%. So there's certainly two parallel universes going on. And that's just something I noticed. So let's get to the sermon. What do you think?
The sermon? Oh, man. Do I need to bring my Bible?
All right. So knowing your history and knowing, you know, something that I've come across in my history of actually being involved in the local scene or meeting people going to events is, I'll call it 12 steps to 21 million. You know, when we first did Noster PHX, a culture shock event, I noticed something because at one point in the event, we started serving alcohol and I noticed no one was really coming up to drink yet. There was a couple
sober.
Like it was the whole thing. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe, you know, maybe they're just in the business mode or something. And then, like you said, that after party, I got to talking with, let's say open mic, Jim Costello, some other people there, and everyone was drinking, you know, water or tea or something. And I'm just like, this is interesting. So I started to notice that there's a subculture of Bitcoiners that are in the sobriety. They're definitely in the sober living mindset. And another thing I noticed, and this goes all the way to BitBlock Boom too, because that was prevalent there as well. At the bars, I'd be ordering like my Miller Lite, and I'd hear, oh, let me get a Topo Chico. I'm like thinking like Topo Chico, like the seltzer. No, they're drinking Topo Chico water at the bar, and I'm like, ah, man, it's everywhere here. It's
you gotta have a drink. You know, that's the social pressure of working in the music industry is that you have to have a drink. You know, so you gotta have something that looks like a drink, even though if you're sober, you know, maybe it's a
that's what Mike does. That's what Open Mike does with the Heineken Zeros or what he has a shirt and one, but it's I've just never honestly been in a community where it was more prevalent, I would say. I at least noticed it. And I don't know. It's actually beautiful, honestly, to not have that social pressure because there's enough people that are ordering that. But they're, well, maybe I don't need a drink. Maybe this isn't the thing, you know. I feel like there's a little bit of a shift in that. When I was talking to Mike. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, I wonder how much it is Bitcoiners, we just think differently and how much it is just I have observed because I've been sober for 11 years now. And there's a culture now where there's a lot of sober, curious people where they may not define themselves as like, oh, I'm an alcoholic or oh, I'm in recovery, but there seems to be a bigger pool, you know, towards this sober, curious or straight edge, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. And I mean, is finding Satoshi a spiritual moment? Is there an awakening?
There might be a spiritual awakening of being a Bitcoiner. I mean, there's a lot of intersections there where I don't know. I think we've all given it up to something bigger than ourselves, right? Like we're serving the greater good here. Is it a religious thing? I mean, we joke about being a cult. you know, Noster Phoenix jokes about being a cult, and then love Bitcoiners it. Are a cult, and Noster's a cult, you know, at large. So it's just kind of like, you know, what is this group of people? Because it is noticeable. There's certain groups of people that I still hang around, you know, my family being one of them. They all drink, and it's very different to be around people who, like, alcohol is like mandatory for them,
right?
And I'm the weirdo because I'm the sober one who, like, you know, like, you know, and that's some of that is from being a sober person in long-term recovery. And some of that's from living in the Midwest. And I come back out here and my family's like very different. And it's, they don't just drink, they talk about alcohol. And that's so weird for me.
It becomes the identity.
Yeah. And I'm like, man, they don't just drink. Like, they also, it's ingrained in their lives. And to me, then you go into like the Bitcoin space or the Noster space, whatever you want to call us, purple and orange folks. And there's not somebody like, hey, where's the margaritas? You know, like you don't have that because it's not the goal. And I think maybe sometimes it comes down to the fact that people just aren't miserable in their lives because there's so much optimism and so much hope over in the purple and orange side of things.
Well, and that optimism and hope is something that's almost necessary in replacement of, you know, let's say I'm recovering. I don't know. I see, like, you know, people have the come to Jesus moments in recovery or something. They don't, almost like they need to just have some sort of a hope or some sort of a forward, some way to go. And I see a lot of that synergy with Bitcoin and giving you hope and low time preference mentality, and really just trying to find the path forward.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I wanted to go with Radio Detox, of like we're detoxing off of something here, and that mm-hmm. thing is the pessimism, you know, because you could see it if you get on Noster. It's, you know, everybody's building something, you know, mm-hmm. everybody's, you either got Nosshole who's entertaining, or you got, you know, all the devs who are building.
Hey, she's building. She's working on turdsoup.com.
Turd soup is on deck, baby. We're gonna have turd soup for life. And, you know, but then you go over to like the legacy social media platforms, which I know very well. You know, I'm a media veteran and I work in social media marketing, you know, most of my day. And you go over there and it's like, I feel like Facebook is specifically geared towards poor people who want to stay poor. And I don't mean that as an insult.
They have fun staying poor, though, right?
Have fun staying poor. They're not having fun staying poor by the evidence. They want to beat up on capitalism. All of the social networks want to beat up on Bitcoiners and say we're boiling the ocean, and they don't get it and they don't want to get it. And that's okay. But you go over to Facebook and you're being constantly barraged with ads and people with negative views of life and people who snap too really quick and become useful idiots for the current thing, whatever it is. It'll be something new in 2 days. Who cares what it is now? And so you see kind of like this shared misery on these other platforms. And then you get on Instagram and it's the people with the fortune cookie sayings, and they're trying to tell you how to live, and they're influencers, and they're trying to sell you something, you know, and it's, there's, you could scroll for 5 minutes and not find one useful thing on probably either of those. And they're both owned by Meta. And then, you know, if you go over Twitter's, oh my God, I got on Twitter the other day. When I get on Twitter every day, and I usually just retweet my Noster friends to get people on Twitter more interested in Noster. But you get over there and it feels like it's very political, and it feels like it's very people trying to, like, Bitcoin people trying to one up each other. Like, I'm more maxi than you, or like I know more than you. And it's just, it's not fun. It does seem a little bit, I don't know, toxic isn't the right word. It just seems boring and predictable. Like you could write the script, you know, you don't even have to look anymore. You know what you're going to get there.
So bringing it back, that's the detox portion. That's, you know, detoxing from that social media, detoxing from whatever that is that captured your mind and soul, you know, 12 steps to 21 million, it's about finding that hope. And whether it's Satoshi or Fiat Joff, you know, they're giving us protocols that kind of establish that hope. You know, I think Noster in general all of a sudden has hope. I feel like the internet has hope because of Noster. So those are kind of interesting correlations there. But I think the that's kind of the underlying theme is really that hope and not getting sucked into the cesspool that is legacy media algorithms or alcoholism. So
yeah, alcoholism, fiat, legacy, social media, it all is
all the isms, man.
Yeah, all the same, the hopeless pile of trash that we all want to get out of, you know, and some of that was, you know, I did radio for a long time, like 20 years.
And we'll get into that, Heather.
Okay. Oh, I'm getting ahead of the host here.
Yeah, I'm steering this sinking ship. You know, I'm the captain over here. At the end of this show, I'm going to be Captain Jack Sparrow stepping onto the dock.
Actually, that is a nest. You definitely embody that.
Not sure where Heather went, but I'm stepping off the dock.
I can see you as Captain Jack Sparrow. That fits your personality. So,
there's a burning question, Heather.
Okay.
Are there levels of cults? So like 1 to 10. And if so, what level would you rate us?
Oh God, we're definitely, no, you know, we're not a cult because we don't try to dictate what people should do. That's the thing.
Yet.
You can choose.
Not yet. So you're saying lower.
No. Yeah. It's, I don't know. I think we're just very nerdy. We're like a Comic-Con, yeah. You know,
so
we're like
10 is Heaven's Gate. 10 is Heaven's Gate. We're like a 2 right now.
But yeah, we're like a 2.
We're the gateway to 10.
Yeah. Well, who's our leader?
Oh, obviously it's Sam, you know, Sam Lightning Star.
It's always easy to throw Sam in his
He produces all the threads that we wear. So, you know.
We're wearing the uniform, our gang killers.
So tell me your life story. You can just kind of give me your journey, because you mentioned that you had radio background. You mentioned certain things, but what's interesting in your life story that kind of brings you here?
Oh God. I don't know. My life story, like how I got sober or why I got sober kind of thing, or,
you know, what your experience. So when I think about your experience, it's interesting to me is number one, radio, number mm-hmm. two, social media, number three, sobriety, number four, yeah. Bitcoin, number five, Noster.
They all go together.
These are all things that apply.
Yeah. So I was a kid who didn't come from the greatest background. So I got into radio because you could be self-made there. Like, you didn't have to get a college degree and, like, you know, pay for all that, which I ultimately, you know, went that route and got a college degree. But as an 18-year-old kid in the Bay Area with no idea what to do with my life, I had no plans. I was really flying by the seat of my pants and fell into college radio. And then fell into rock radio in San Jose and San Francisco and was off and running until I ran out of money, moved to Phoenix. This is a very condensed version of the story. Moved to Phoenix because this is kind of where I'm from. I'm kind of from both places. And then got into radio here doing pop radio. And wherever you go, there you are. So the people I got in with, who I'm still friends with to today, although I'm obviously sober, which changes the dynamic with a lot of people in my life. But I got into the business. I wasn't even 21 when I moved out here. So I got into radio and records and had a substance abuse issue already and got into, you know, really just this. We can say this now in context now, knowing that we're talking to Bitcoin, you know, Noster folks, but like it was very fiat. It was very, you know, what can I get the record label to pay for? Very much having my partying supported by record labels in the bars that I worked in, because you have to do that in radio. You got to entertain. You got to put on shows. You got to put on club nights. You got to do all this stuff. And so like I fit in seamlessly because everybody was just fucked up and I was fucked up. And, you know, whatever promise I had as a young person, the alcoholism was always there. So like I would try to get sober without ever really dealing with the problem. Like I would have streaks of sobriety and then I would have streaks of like working till like 1 a.m. at a nightclub and then like sleeping in last night's clothes with the stamp on my hand on the radio station couch and then waking up and doing the morning show like 6 a.m. So it was a crazy lifestyle. Thank God it didn't go on for too long. Because I wouldn't have made it if it had gone on any longer. So I think 9/11 was a big point of change for me because I was like, I was kind of assigned or voluntold to be the news reporter on a pop station. And so I got into journalism, and then I was like, oh, I could really get into this. And this could maybe keep me out of trouble. I don't know. Like, this could be a goal. And so I got into doing journalism and pivoted and got out of radio for a while, and life kind of happened. And a lot of things happened. And so the substance abuse problem just kind of progressed, I think, in the background over the years. And not coming from a great background, there was nobody ever saying, hey, you should stop. You know, like, you have a problem, like, you should get help. And to this day, my family has never been like, thank God you're sober. Because now it's like, you're the weird, why are you like this? Why are you all sober? You know, Christian and weird, and you don't curse, and you, like, you're a freelance person. Like, why don't you work for some company and get healthcare benefits? Like, I'm just the blackest of black sheep, but I'm really not a black sheep. I'm like the one who did gooder than, I don't know, than I came from. So
are you a purple sheep?
You know, there was a big, I'm a purple sheep. I'm like the rainbow spiritual goat or something. There's glitter or something. Like I got out of it. I got away from the people in the life. And I think that there's a major detox that's happened for, like, I don't know, the last 11 years or so, where, like, I got help. Like, I got well. I went and got, like, 10 years of therapy. I got sober. You know, there's some undercurrents in my life that have always been there. Like, there's always been yoga. There's always been, you know, music and radio, but I got out of radio about 5 years ago, got into TV 2020, which was just a disaster because it was 2020. I had a pandemic and an election to cover, and I've done a lot of elections, but there was something that was just so combustible about that particular election, along with the pandemic, that I started kind of looking for the escape hatch. Like, how do I opt out of this style of living? How do I, you know, and somehow happened upon shit coining and trading, which I did not shit coin, but I thought Bitcoin was trading, which is how I got into Bitcoin. And then eventually found kind of the right information. Like, I would find like Max and Stacy and Simply Bitcoin. My trade did not go, get out of my DMs, like, little girl. There's always some girl in your DMs. How's your train? What are you gonna do if it sucks, huh, honey?
But how's that chart looking? So
that's kind of like, is that a red candle or a green candle, baby? Are you just happy to see me? So that's kind of like the condensed version of, like, 2013 is where I got sober. So, I started getting sober by running, because, like, I was. Like, I did a half marathon. I did a full marathon because 2012 was so bad for me that I had to
stop you.
And it
there?
Wasn't like there was, yeah,
cause,
yeah.
Because there's a correlation with getting sober and running, I think.
There is. Eminem did it.
What's up with that?
And because it's obsessive, and I personally think it has to do with your brain chemistry. So I also, at some point I started working, it was 2015. I started working in the addiction field. So I worked in a detox, which is why I call the podcast Radio Detox. Mm-hmm. So I worked in a detox, a recovery center, in a jail, and I worked for 4.5 years in the recovery field. I was a recovery specialist. So I worked with, like, I worked on the DUI program. I worked in the jail and probation, all that stuff. So, you know, to say why do recovery people get obsessed with running? Because I think it has to do with your brain chemistry. And, like, I am today fully aware. I'm aware of when I'm, like, dopamine seeking, you know, because, like, I'll start trying to, like, race my car or something stupid, and I'll be like, oh, you know, I'm trying to get some dopamine. Like, I'm getting bored with life. Like, I should just go to the gym like a normal person. And, like, so that's what I do now. But I in the beginning, like, you're always looking for a high. And then you have to realize that you're always looking for a high, and you have to learn to be bored. But you also, part of recovery is building a life that you don't want to escape from, and building a life that you're proud of, and a life that serves you. Whereas, like, that's probably a foreign concept when you're still in addiction. So, like, runners are insane, and running also gives you, if you haven't noticed, most runs, have a charity tie-in. So like you raise money. So like when I got sober, I was raising money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society team in training, and ended up running the San Diego Rock and Roll Marathon. And so that was, there's like a service component to being sober. And actually I ran that marathon before I got sober. Like I was still, drinking whiskey when I was running the half marathon and the marathon and all the charity runs leading up to the marathon. So that did not go well for me, but you know, I got it done and I raised the money and I did the rock and roll marathon. But I think there's something that you get from running that you can get some purpose from it. And you also, you get that dopamine hit.
Interesting. So that, by the way, when you said you were working on yourself and you achieved greatness, because I've met you IRL, I met you obviously through Noster, but you're just so based. You're like one of the most just beautiful humans, honestly, so well-rounded. You can take a joke, you can take a punch, you know, it's just, you can deliver it right back. You have a very warm heart. Nothing about you. I mean, whatever you worked on, I don't know how much you actually had to, but it seems like you're pretty foundationally sound.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, the work is never done too. So, you know, that's the other secret of it, is that you can't get complacent. And you gotta stay humble and you gotta keep doing the work too, because I could easily lapse back into being an absolute tyrant and an asshole at any point in time. And I know that, I'm aware of that. You know, cause I've seen it happen. I've definitely done it. You know, my getting sober in 2013 came after years and years of failed attempts.
I can't pretend to know. But when you say failed attempts, you know, a lot of it, I guess you're just not ready, right? You're not truly ready.
You're not ready. No, like when I, and my story of getting sober is not even that like exciting. It was just like, I was never homeless. I never went to jail. I never got arrested. I was just miserable. And, you know, and I, like we've touched on that misery that you get in like that hopeless kind of lifestyle where, you know, like all you do is complain and everything's really negative. And, you know, you complain about things like they're never going to get better. And then you get into like this space that we're in, you know, that where we're detoxing from traditional systems, right? We're like, you got a problem, you're going to find a dev and they're going to fix it. You know, they're going to run with your idea if they can fix it. You know, you got a problem, there's a use case. There's, you know, there's a software, right?
I think I did a meme of two people inside of a detox center and the guy's like, what are you in for? And he's like, algorithms, man. the algorithms, I was addicted. Just detoxing.
We are like more than we know.
Where did you find Bitcoin? So you mentioned it, you thought it was just a trading mechanism, maybe in like the COVID, everyone's a trader type of thing, because everyone's sitting at home and got a little stimmy check or something.
We got our stimmy checks.
That was one of those opportunities in the market where everything dropped like a knife. So everyone's like, ooh, good time to buy. Or, you know, I don't even know. Then the meme coins and meme trading, whether it's the apes and the, you know, AMC, and it, you know, it just became kind of a joke, Dogecoin and all these things. It was just memes and trading were kind of the deal. Well, but it was kind of a necessary step. But so you traded Bitcoin. How was, you know, you had a great trade.
How's your trade?
What made you actually study it and actually get involved in it?
What made me study it was I was interested in the people on the outskirts of it. And, you know, like I grew up a poor kid, you know, like I didn't get anything in life until I provided it for myself. We'll put it that way. So like, I didn't know anything about money to begin with. And I'm terrible with numbers and math. Like it's always been a challenge for me. And I was like, I was determined in 2020 to just kind of get better at that. Like I'm going to learn about money. I'm going to learn about finance and numbers, because we're stuck at home, right? So that's how I got into the whole trading thing. But then I would read like Robert Kiyosaki and then find him on YouTube. So I think the algorithm kind of started feeding me like some of the based material that's out there, like Rich Dad Poor Dad, like Robert Kiyosaki kind of stuff. Because then I would find like Max and Stacy, and I would find like Simply Bitcoin, and like those kind of people were like key on my journey. And I'd be like, Wow, I really do not think like this at all. Like, there's something wrong with my thinking.
Robert Kiyosaki guy gets, he's like in clickbait galore all over the place. It's like, rich dad, poor dad says this. Rich dad, poor dad says.
It's, you know, like, what? Talk about
he weighs in on everything, apparently.
Yeah, and like he's very you know, there's such a, I think he's very right leaning too, and I think there's he might be he's not a maxi, you know, he's not a Bitcoin maxi, but he'll talk about Bitcoin, but he's, I think he's still like a gold guy too. So like, yeah. And I haven't followed him for a while, so I mean, I'm going off my memory here. I don't remember the last time I followed him, but you know, there's kind of,
as and you I, look I have up a friend at the poster of him on your wall.
Like, I have a friend who's a gold bug, and I'm just like, dude, you gotta stop doing that. And he's just like, well, you know, I bought ETH and Bitcoin. I'm like, oh, why did you buy ETH? You know, like, people be like, I bought this or that and Bitcoin, you know, because everybody's like, I gotta diversify. And I'm like, no. Like, what have you learned about Bitcoin? Have you studied Bitcoin? Because there's no need to diversify. And like, this is not financial advice by any means. Like, do you
Peter Schiff is in disbelief right now. You know what's interesting about Peter? It's like he spends his whole day like dogging Bitcoin, and it's like Bitcoin just lives rent free in his mind. It's like his whole stance is how great gold is, but he spends his whole time talking about how bad Bitcoin is. It's like a very weak stance, I think, as a person.
But a lot of people do that. I have another friend who's like, I'm buying gold. And I'm like, you need to buy Bitcoin. Well, I'm interested in buying Bitcoin. Like, where do I go? How do I do that? I'm like, oh, hey, pull up a chair. Let's do this. You know, they think of it like I'm just buying bullion. Like, right? Like, I'm just going to go buy my little gold bar or whatever. Bullion, whatever. Like
chicken bullion?
No, like gold bullion. maybe I should ask more questions of my, what are you buying? But I think people don't understand, and I don't know how true this is anymore, because there's so many, you know, like Cash App, you can just buy Bitcoin. Do people realize they can buy Bitcoin? Because there's one friend of mine, a Gen Z person, shall we say, confessed to me one day, like, hey, like, I bought $50 of Bitcoin and a while back, and now like I forgot about it, and now like it's worth $200 in my Cash App. I'm like, hell yeah, welcome to the orange world. come in for a hug, you know. It's kind of like, you know, that's the, I think the on-ramp of they're there now. I mean, like, when I got into Bitcoin, you couldn't buy it on PayPal, which you can now, and I think that all these different financial products are starting to have these Bitcoin components. Even Square, if you're a Square merchant, you can now, you know, convert to Bitcoin in that ecosystem as well. So there are more places, I think, where people are getting exposed to it, but they, you know, and I think we're reaching an inflection point where people are going to get into it, but they're not really going to study it. You know, who wrote the thing? Somebody wrote an article recently. It was on Bitcoin Audible, where orange pilling doesn't work anymore. And it was, I was like, you know, there's probably a good point to that. Because I don't think most people, I think at a certain point, are going to buy Bitcoin with the financial product that they're familiar with, and they're not going to, you know, I said this at our Bit Builders. I said, you know, normies aren't going to read the Bitcoin Standard. You know, that's a bookie book. You know, most people aren't going to read Rich Dad Poor Dad. You know, like, so we're hitting the point where
is the new orange pilling. You got to get with the
time. There you go. We're going to reach people through the culture, which, you know, which we're talking about today, is like, you can live a lot. You don't have to go like full carnivore or something, but you can be like, hey, you know, maybe I'm going to drink less and take better care of my body because my time preference changes. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going to be alive in 30 years and buying Bitcoin, like, and now I'm learning about time preference, which is a big part of being a Bitcoiner, and like planning for the future and planting trees that I'm not going to sit on. Like, maybe I'm buying Bitcoin today that's going to go to my grandkids. And that's where I think lifestyle changes and culture changes. And I think that's what we're seeing now in Bitcoin and in Nostr, where things are starting to, like you're saying, like, we're getting more optimistic But like people from the outside looking in aren't going to understand why. Like I can explain why we are a more optimistic group of people, but somebody from the outside sees us and they're just like, oh, look at those weird Bitcoiners. They're obsessed with white papers. They're boiling the ocean, you know, they're obsessed with money. And like, if you really step out of your own comfort zone and you look at how other people react to, you know, quote unquote us, and you realize how hard it is to reach the majority of people.
Hey, shout out to our audience, by the way, Heather.
I know. I see we got Derek Ross in there now.
Yeah. Snowden started 9 minutes ago, and we haven't lost anybody. So.
Everybody's like, you know what? Screw that guy. Made it. I want to hear about QW and Heather talking about sobriety and optimism and hope, baby. Bitcoin is hope.
So you have radio experience, and clearly you've whether it's Wave Lake, whether it's Fountain, the whole value for value mechanism of Bitcoin and Noster, you seem to be very drawn to. You're a big supporter. with your experience in radio, what do you think we're missing kind of in the content creating value for value space that you see today? I think you have a pretty... You're like a sponge of value for value. So I think you're seeing, there's got to be some contrast.
Yeah, it might be the other way around. I think it's more like the traditional systems are, it's not what like we're missing. It's like what the traditional systems are more missing. Cause like I could go off on this subject because like when I worked in radio, there was, you know, you've got your airtime, you measure everything in, you know, minutes and seconds. You've got to sell that airtime, you know, to legitimize what you're doing. So you got to have all these advertisers. And there was never, this was my biggest pet peeve in making commercials, was screaming car ads, right? So like the advertiser comes in, spends a bunch of money, you know, to buy 60-second spots to sell ads, you know, or sell cars on their lot. And the ads are terrible, right? If you listen to a radio station, it's, you got screaming car ads, come in now, we've got a sale, Labor Day sale, da, 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 da. And they're obnoxious, right? But you switch the channel because you don't want to hear that crap. And every commercial is bad and they're all car dealers. And maybe you get like a mattress store in between a couple of car dealers and it's terrible. So like, are you putting out something of value or not? And guess who is telling little Heather what to do on the air? It turns out to be the advertisers at some point, because, and I remember like one particularly bad experience where I was broadcasting live on the car lot for a car dealer. This was in Wichita, but I won't say who it was. And the car dealer, like, I'm doing my job. Like I'm broadcasting, I'm reading the copy, but in a cool way, cause I'm a radio DJ, and the guy on the car lot, like, looks at it like, I'm paying for you to be here, grabs the mic from me. Like it was very physical and starts going off doing his own thing. And it was something that was like I've always worked in like boys clubs, you know, like whether it was a radio station, you know, record label, a jail, right? But this was like one of those moments where it was like, dude, don't touch me. And like, nobody from the station came to my rescue on the spot or later. It was like, well, the advertiser's the boss. And it's like, I am the producer of the show. I am like the person who helps drive this product that we're putting out on the air. And you know, you're going to let me like just let it disintegrate because some guy like pretty much like knocked me over at a car lot to start doing like a 3-minute ad, which is more than what they paid for. So I mean, that's one example of who's in charge is the person writing the check, right? So that's one way that radio fails. Another way that radio fails is that most people hate it, right? Because it's the same 10 songs over and over. But then you also have to appease the FCC, right? So if we want to go way back to the 90s when a certain president deregulated the industry and now there's no competition, right? You got like what, four or five morning shows to listen to across the country. Like I'm an old school morning radio DJ. You know, like I could still be doing that today. And, you know, thank God, I'm grateful I'm not. But I could, that was what I was doing, you know, in the early 2000s. Like I was doing a morning show and the consolidation came in and kind of got rid of everything to this point. Like even you're not getting local news. You're not getting local personalities. You're not getting anybody that locally serves your community, which you have to do per FCC guidelines. You have to offer a certain percentage of community serving programming on a weekly basis or monthly basis, quarterly basis. You actually have to do quarterly reports on that. But, you know, so there's the purpose of Radio Detox for me, which is the podcast that I started, is I don't have to do that. I don't have to appease an advertiser because I can do value for value. I don't have to appease the FCC or any other regulator. And the way you do that in traditional radio is you have this public affairs programming, and you probably heard it if you're ever driving really early on a Sunday morning or really late on a Sunday night. That's when they air the public affairs programming, and you interview somebody from a local nonprofit. You ask them a half hour's worth of questions. I used to do that at every station that I worked at. And it's not great programming. You know, some people listen to that stuff. Some people don't. Most people don't. That's why you put it on at an hour when nobody's listening. So let's detox off of these ideas. Let's put on music people actually want to hear and give people variety and give people the discovery of music. Okay, let's give people programming that doesn't suck. Let's make money without screaming car ads and car dealers that are going to, you know, knock me over at the dealership so they can take my microphone and take over my ear because we're paying for it, little girl. So like, let's get rid of all these problems and give people what they want. And that's what I hope to do with Radio Detox, is bringing the artist back to the people. And, you know, Noster makes it really accessible to talk to your favorite artists. Right now, I imagine at some point in time, Noster grows to the point where you probably can't get Ainsley's attention, or you probably can't, you know, get a reaction because she said something about Joe Martin. And then you have like this whole, you know, back and forth going on with these artists.
Dude, what?
But what? You know, well, but right now you have a one, I think you have a one-to-one relationship as a fan with some of these artists, and you know, they're getting value out of it. You're getting value out of it. And you're taking out all of these middlemen, these regulators, these advertisers. You know, it's a more enjoyable experience overall for everybody.
Yeah. And the advertising model creates a little bit of a dishonest approach to business mm-hmm. or your message. And then on top of that, the regulators kind of regulate you to a relevancy and create that environment where, I don't know, you end up just being a gerbil on the wheel instead of trying to innovate, right?
Yeah. I mean, it used to be good. We used to be able to do community oriented things and feel like we were actually helping the community, but you don't see that happen really anymore. It's just like, oh, are we doing what fits the FCC requirement? Okay. Yeah, we are. Like, I mean, 24 years ago, we were doing stuff the bus, you know, down in South Phoenix, we would get a school bus. We would fill it with school supplies that we did stuff the bus for Christmas. So we were doing Christmas toys. We used to do, for the Real Gift Foundation, we would buy people, you know, Thanksgiving dinner. Like there's a huge, always been a huge homeless problem in Phoenix. But what we were talking about back then was a problem of homeless children, homeless families. Okay. And so we would go on the air and do a fundraising drive and get Thanksgiving dinners for every homeless family that was in Phoenix back then. If you remember the Thomas J. Pappas School for Homeless Children. Do you see anybody, I mean,
who doing
doesn't
that, remember
right?
that, you know?
Oh my God, that was me.
Thomas J. Pappas School of Homeless Children.
Yeah, it's not that anymore, but it was.
Is that the center for kids that can't read good?
That's where you went to school. But no, like when do you see somebody do that? What, you don't see it anymore, and that might be because nobody's listening to the radio anymore, because you know it's yeah. just you know
yeah, the accessible. Only thing I hear I listen to like a AM or FM sports talk. They do an annual event for the Phoenix Children's Hospital, but I know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, you just don't see kind of things like that anymore. Interesting.
Yeah, if you talk through...
I haven't thought about it like that.
Yeah, if you talk to people who run nonprofits, they will tell you that they're having the hardest time fundraising like every year, every Christmas, Thanksgiving, like the times when they usually raise the most and funds and donations of any kind, it gets harder and harder every year because the whole entire media landscape is changing. And like, if, you know, 20 something years ago, yeah, we're raising funds for nonprofits with radio and TV. Well, there's another thing. Who's watching TV? Everybody's got a Netflix, a Max, a Disney, Apple TV. You know, we're all splintering off into our own little worlds of shows that we watch.
Decentralization. And,
yeah, you're not watching your local news anymore. You don't know. I don't watch local news. I don't know what's going on in my community. You know,
I honestly, if I see a storm cloud or something, I'm like, I better turn on the local news and see what's happening.
Well, I have an app for that.
That's like it. well, the app is right because it's like it's not as accurate, I feel like, to the local.
Well, you know, if you're talking about weather,
I get rugged all the time with the rain. Again, I was mentioning to you the other day, the monsoon, even that day when it was like building up and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's coming finally.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't come. I don't know. Everyone else keeps getting the rain, but me this season, but it's all good.
You're in the wrong neighborhood.
I just feel like the weather, those weather apps lie to me is what it comes down to.
I think the weather app doesn't know where I am. I mean, sometimes it still thinks I'm in Wichita. I'm like, okay, it's cool. I'm out here in the desert. Speaking of
where you are, when did you find Noster? Do you remember when you first came?
I do. I was in the Jack Hatchening and then I just didn't get into it. So I kind of like, yeah, I got into it. I was like,
at all.
No, I was
like, I knew everyone at that time. You weren't there.
I started the account and I bounced. And then what happened was I moved back here in November, like right before Thanksgiving. We had a family member passing away. And so there was a lot of sitting around doing nothing in the house between the holiday and the death thing that was going on. So I was, and then my family was drinking. So there's my little sober butt sitting over in the corner like, I need to do something. And the only thing I can do is like play on my phone. So I'm going to play with this Noster thing. So that's kind of how that happened. So it was like after I moved here, I got into that. And then there had been no Bitcoin meetup in Wichita. And like I was always looking for other Bitcoiners on Bitcoin Twitter and like anybody in Wichita, Bitcoiner, and like crickets. So like I was like, do I start a meetup because I'm going to move? You know, I don't want to start something and then bounce. And then I moved here and I was like, well, there's a Bitcoin meetup. There's a Noster meetup. I'm just going to go meet those Noster people. And then I know you.
Yeah, the purple cult is just way more. It's a whole vibe, you know.
Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be a purple cult. I just thought it was going to be just a bunch of Bitcoiners who liked social media. I don't know what I thought it was going to be, but, you know, I met you guys and then you guys sucked me in the culture shock. And here we are. Now I'm on pleb chain radio telling you about how I got sober.
The hopium den of Noster.
Yeah.
Oh, man. The hopium. So with your background kind of in social media or just media in general, how has Noster changed your perception? Are you starting to kind of back away from legacy in general and just really saying, you know what, I'm going to be intentional with my time, maybe look towards the future that Noster can bring?
Yeah, I got my foot in both. And I think there's like, I definitely spend less time on Instagram. I mean, it definitely changes your mindset to spend time on Noster. I work for a social media.
I have like 20 or 30 like messages or something, you know, just like, you know, because people would send you videos. That's all it really is for me. Like my wife will send me videos. Sadly, it'll be like a week and I got like a week's worth of videos that she sent me. I'm like, shit, I feel like an obligation to watch the videos.
It's like friend homework. Like somebody sent me.
Yeah, it's friend homework. There you go.
Yeah, I have a TikTok. I don't log into it. I quit TikTok after October 7th because it was too much for me. And
I never downloaded it. I thought that sure it was a.
My cats have a TikTok. I have a TikTok, but my TikTok I haven't touched because you realize that it's at a certain point that you are fed certain things. Whether they're good or bad is you know, up to you to determine. But I think there's a lot of like, there are people in my life who are like, well, I saw this thing on TikTok. Like there's this new disease going around. And I'm like, do you know what you sound like right now? Take off your tinfoil hat. You do not have the new TikTok disease of the moment. You know, and it's like when you forget how to think, I think, on some of these things, and you get fed, obviously, what you click on, especially LinkedIn, you know, especially TikTok. It just serves you more of what has captured your attention, and that's how it's built. But like, I work for a social media marketing agency. We specialize in B2B tech startups. So we're marketing software. And so like, I kind of have to still be in that world. And then there are days that I'm like, God, I do not get it. I don't get the brat summer trend, you know, but I also, you know, for this company, I write a social media marketing newsletter for the company. Like I ghostwrite this thing. So I spend a considerable amount of my time each week looking at the latest developments in social media. What are the new features on Instagram? There's like, you know, 6 to 12 a week, you know, what is being tested over at X? And so like, I have my foot in that world. And then I get back on Noster, which is where I actually like interact with people and I share things about myself. And I feel like I can be myself on Noster because I can curse if I want to curse, or I can mention certain things or use certain words. Yeah. I don't have to constantly be filtering it through my head of like, can I post this? Will I get shadow banned?
You definitely have a synergy with the Noster Lynn.
the Noster world of like,
Lynn Alden, we call her Noster Lynn.
Noster Lynn. Yeah. Oh, that
she's
Lynn.
On
yeah.
Noster, it's like a totally different entity. She can be her true yeah. self without worrying about, you know, she's not on her macro newsletter and her, you know, her economical follow list. That she can be herself, to, you know, break out the Dungeons and Dragons and StarCraft or whatever else makes her tick.
Well, yeah, because you kind of have to be a different person in different places. You know, that's true of all the legacy social media apps. You have to have a different, you know, if you could post about one thing on each of them, you have to write it differently for each of them, right? Like it's laborious. And then who's going to see it? Nobody's going to see it. You know, how do you engagement farm so somebody interacts with you on Twitter? Like I get on Twitter every day and I retweet Noster things that you all post so that my tiny Twitter following might actually see it and get interested in Noster, but nobody ever really interacts with me there, except maybe Ainsley, maybe Ainsley and Santos. But like you get on Noster, you could post something and somebody's at least going to argue with you. Somebody's going to interact with you. Someone's going to like it or hang Tanya or whatever. And you know, like people are actually going to see what you post. And you're actually going to meet some friends there, you know, which is an interesting thing too. That Noster, for whatever reason, I think it's the chronological feed versus, you know, the algorithm, but Noster kind of fosters interaction. And then because I think Noster people are more attuned to let's meet up in real life, you know, you meet up with people in real life because there's a social structure that's happening offline.
There's a bonding experience now, for sure, with the chronological.
Yeah, because... Well, I think it's because it's like most people on Noster right now are Bitcoiners. So it's like, okay, we all see the world the same way. There's shared values, right?
Yeah.
So like, I actually wanted to be friends with you all.
Everyone's sober living.
Yeah. So sober life. You don't have to be sober.
And runners.
Yeah, no, yeah. Sober runners.
Everyone just got done with their run. They're looking at chat.
Yeah. It's like, well, there's a different mindset here. And people actually want to hang out with each other. Whereas like people on Facebook don't want to hang out with you. They're like, oh God, I peopled today. I'm so tired. But there's a different viewpoint on Noster.
I like the person that comes to Noster and they put like 15 hashtags. Like it's like Instagram or something like that. Like
I think those are the Activity Pub people. I think those people are either on Activity Pub and like, or Open Vibe.
It's like you don't get it yet. You're not there. You don't understand it. But yeah, I tell anybody new to Noster, just start communicating. You have to put in that communication work. You can't just post a cool picture, throw 15 hashtags and wait for your likes type of thing. That's the mindset.
That is the behavior that has been rewarded.
Like, oh, so no one says anything. I, you know, it's like, dude, like there's a whole global chat, follow people, start communicating, because what you'll find is they actually talk back. So,
yeah, see what other people are talking about. Introduce yourself.
You're like, wait a second, they talk back? No, wait, we're having a conversation right now? Wow, this is like, crazy.
Oh my God, I'm not posting into a void. Like, people actually are going to talk to me and like have something to say, for better, for worse. Like, I'm going to get noticed. Like, I actually exist somewhere, and it's not like I'm just posting because somebody said, you know, you got to post this and it's got to be this many characters, and now you got to have a line break and 15 hashtags and 40 emoji. And yeah, that's how you get in.
And then maybe you get zapped here and there. You know, we're not beholden to, you know, Pfizer advertising or something to where we can't talk about it. You know, all those little caveats of freedom.
The uncensoredness of it all.
So what's next for Radio Detox? You had your first episode. How often are you looking to do it? Is it going to be sprinkled in here and there?
It's going to be sprinkled in. Yeah, it's going to be sprinkled in. I don't have anybody lined up for the next episode yet, and that's just because I've had a very busy month. I want it to be every 2 weeks or every week. So it's just going to depend on my schedule and how often I can get people on. So it's going to be, you know, interviewing an artist, and or, you know, somebody like any Noster developer, anybody doing anything in the Noster space.
What about like Derek Ross? He's in a Creed cover band.
Since he's in the audience, you know, yeah.
Well, he is in a Creed cover band. I think he plays bass, but maybe someone like himself.
Yeah, so somebody like that, where it's like the culture here, you know, the spirit of Radio Detox is detoxing off the old system, detoxing off of the old, you know, music systems, the old social media systems. And, you know, being able to put some artist music on and being able to zap these people and so that you can see what songs are out there and get artists, you know, point of view too. Because one of the things I'm very fascinated with is how to make money. Because, you know, I know how artists make money, right? I worked in the industry, and, you know, there was a time when people would get, you know, twice a year, you get your royalty checks in like February and August, and then you pay a bunch of bills, and then it's back to the grind. And then, you know, you're working, and do people hear your music? You know, what are you making off the streaming services? Nothing. You know, like Ainsley on Radio Detox, she talks about, you know, spending 5 years and putting her 25 songs on all the major streaming services, and she makes $700, right? Last summer, about this time last summer, she goes to the Lightning Summit. She gets orange pilled. She gets, I think, subsequently purple pilled. And so she gets on Wave Lake, cherry on top, goes to the top. Hey. And, you know, a year later, she's earned $10,000 in a year versus 5 years, multiple services, $700. And I think that story is a story that needs to be told. And like this week, I hit up, because like I'll look at artists on Wave Lake and be like, oh, where's their Noster profile? You know, and a lot of them don't have that. And so like I hit up Chris Nichols on his Instagram. I'm like, I got to get you on Noster. And he was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so eventually, like this week, I hit him up again. I'm like, hey, this new song is great. I got to get you on Noster. And he's like, okay, fine. You know, like I've got one. And I'm like, oh, no way. You know, so you got to follow Chris Nichols Music. It's all one word, Chris Nichols Music on Noster. And give him a welcome. He's posted a video there, as he does on an Instagram, but he's posted a video already on his Noster to where you can actually get a little taste there of his singing. And he's a guy in the UK. He does some pop music. He does some country music, and it's like, whoa, this guy's British, you know, cause you know, how you can never tell anybody's accent when they're singing until they start talking. It's kind of like one of those.
Well, I learned there was country Americano. Which is Americana. Basically country for us. That's what Joe Martin mentioned.
Americana is like a whole format.
Yeah, well, it's like football it's Americano, whole... but they call it country Americano. Like, all right, we'll take it.
Americana. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I order a coffee every day, iced Americano. Well, it's espresso, right? Americano.
Yeah. Americano is the drink. Americana is the music.
Yeah. So I saw that Spotify is going to be doing hi-fi, high fidelity, man. for a couple more bucks a month. You can get high fidelity music. And then also they had like 7 million new subscribers. But yet, you know, this just adds to the whole narrative that these musicians, these quote unquote starving artists aren't getting shit from all this, you know?
No, they're not.
And this the really, they can keep putting lipstick on the pig, but, you know, Spotify, but at the end of the day, they're not actually translating to helping the people that their product is built off of.
And I think every couple months, Apple raises my price like $2. And it's like, that's not going to the artists. You know, and I'm not getting anything extra out of it either. Ooh,
well, Apple's not doing too well. You know, they only have like $30 billion in cash, and you know, they're just it's tough. The money's tight. It's tough to pay the content creators.
It's easy to say they're doing well, but they put a ton of money into Apple TV and doing original shows that nobody's watching or even aware of, and it's been years now. And like, there are some of the best shows I've ever watched are on Apple.
I tend to agree. They got some really good shows.
Well, now they're tightening their belt because they're like, wow, we have spent all of this money on Apple TV shows and there's like little return, you know?
Yeah. They're going to start filming the shows in China with children and not pay them.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like shoes. You just got to start go budget films.
Oh, my God.
Child labor.
I think that's what Netflix does.
Well, yeah. I think we touched on everything that I wanted to today. Anything else?
Gosh, I don't know. I think there's so much going on in the space that, I mean, we could go on for hours, honestly.
We could, but that's what the PCR is all about. We literally have hours of random shows from the space. It's funny because I literally, if you look back, I mean, it's like, I've got everything from psychedelics to, you know, to musicians to the human rights. You know, it's interesting. It really is. But, you know, Bitcoin and Nostr touch so much. So it's always something, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little baby culture that's going to grow up. And what will it become? You know, right now we're seeing... You know, we're getting into music. We're getting into audio. You know, this is an audio podcast. We're recording this. You know, we're not seeing each other's faces. We're seeing little avatars. But I think
it's
in the future,
called having a face for radio. You know what I mean?
It is, baby. but in the future, I think you're going to see like, I hope there's a little more video to it. You know, I think music's a great gateway drug into this. Mm-hmm. You know, social media, great gateway drug into this. Cause like these, what are we tired of? We're tired of the music industry being the way it is. We're tired of ticketing being the way it is. We're tired of social media being the way it is. We're tired of journalism and news being the way it is. And I think Nostr can fix all of this. You know, Bitcoin can fix the fiat mindset that also fixes this. So, you know, we're in the beginning of the journey, I think. And what will it be a year from now or two or three, four or five years
now? So early. It's just so early.
So early. You know, we got breakout stars like Nosshole here. You know, I think that purple pill your wife thing was like, that lives rent free in my head. Where it's like, bring more women into Nostr and Bitcoin.
Anybody
bring
your wife. No, Nosshole posted a video of like, yeah, purple pill. It's kind of talking about how we always talk about we're going out to purple pill. And it's like, well, you know, what about your wife, bro? Like, why don't you start there?
Yeah,
because I don't see anybody's
your wife tired of hearing about it. your wife doesn't want to hear about Bitcoin or Nostr.
To that point, I did have, after Wallet Satoshi kind of went down and there was a lot of issues with Lightning wallets, it seemed like the easiest way for my wife was to join Nostr so she can sell her baked goods at Culture Shock and just zapped to her profile. And that was kind of the last time she was on Nostr.
I think I paid her with Cash App, though. I think I figured it out. Like,
yeah. But then she had to figure out how to accept it and stuff. I don't know. It's a whole scene. Don't get me started with Lightning wallets. It's like self sovereign and then nothing works. And, you know, my wife's just trying to sell a freaking muffin. And I'm like, don't worry, babe, you know, you're sovereign.
And oh my God, her baked goods are so good. you know, she better be back at Culture Shock 25 serving more muffins. And
she will. And oh my God. Know, I've been looking into it. I think we should do a Noster PHX song. You know, every good cult has some sort of a, maybe even a hymn.
I have a playlist on Wavelake of like Noster PHX. Cause there's a track that I'm on that somebody, there's a track that Santos is on. And you know, obviously, you know, Sam's got his own music. Like there's a Noster Phoenix playlist in my Wavelake that I've been building. Like, oh, we boy. Already have it.
It sounds, you're a fad. You're definitely building the case right now.
I'm a fed.
Yeah, playlist. Yeah.
Quote unquote. Oh my God.
Well, all right. I think that's a perfect time to wrap up. I think we did well. Anything else? I'm really looking forward to Radio Detox episode 2. Anybody listening, please listen to episode 1. Always listen on Fountain. Is that the only place it's available?
It's only available in the podcasting 2.0 ecosystem. So don't try to find it on Apple or Spotify. Just go to Fountain or Alan Beats or I don't know, Podcast Index, you know, whatever. I forget the name of all the podcasting 2.0, you know, different apps, but it's on those. So whichever one you have that you're listening to, it's on there.
Yeah. And really looking forward to Noster integration into Fountain because I'm currently on the beta, and I think it's such a great. It's basically a game changer for us in the space to communicate and expand the reach. It's really neat to actually see the growth. Another thing about the Fountain turning into a client, a full blown client, is they were already an app by itself, like standalone, and they were able to actually convert fully to a Noster client. Which was neat to see because there's, you know, like Wavelake, they just happened to be building it while Noster came around. So they rode the wave and were building it through Noster. Fountain was around before Noster was really a thing. So it's neat to kind of see that people can actually go back and completely convert to Noster clients.
So. Yeah, that's going to be a new on-ramp for Noster, I think.
Yeah.
And therefore Bitcoin because you can boost, obviously.
Yeah. And I love the fact that you can listen to music on Fountain, Wavelake, the podcasting, and there's something else. Ebooks or you know, which that's a whole other shit show is what authors actually make in these audio books when people are using a credit versus actually buying the audio book.
Ooh, that's another frontier. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
That's a thing. No, the credits you get pennies versus if someone actually buys it. It's all in the fine print. Devil's in the details. So
see, that's why I like to disentangle from things like Amazon, because I'll try to buy any audiobook on any audiobook service other than Amazon, because it's just like, where does the money go? You know, like what does the author get? I'm only getting mainstream stuff marketed to me. Like there's got to be something besides like the last 3 years of top 10 bestseller books for me to read. I just read Bitcoin stuff anyway. So yeah, that's another thing to look into for sure.
Yeah. I'm still on R.L. Stein. So.
Oh my God. Now I know what you're doing in the bathroom. He's not on Noster, folks. He's reading R.L. Stein books.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Anybody listening, this goes without saying, listen on Fountain, support value for value, communicate with us, boost it, get in the conversation, support value for value. The mission is expansion. Value for value works with people using it. So thank you very much. Yeah. Until next week. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.